Okay, Rabbi Say, the majority of you requested a shiur on hashgacha topics. Parshas Noach has very much that can be said that's related to hashgacha. I sent out a small sheet that talks about three topics in hashgacha. The beginning of Parshas Noach tells us that Hashem decided to destroy the planet. And the reasons that are given in the Torah for Hashem deciding to destroy humanity is that Vatishachei Saaretz Lefnei Ha'alokim. There are two separate reasons. One reason is called Hashchasa, and the other reason is called Chamas. Now, Hashchasa, Rashi translates, means it's Lashon Erva and Avodah Zarah. Hashchasa is an expression of sexual immorality. It's an expression of Avodah Zarah, Batimalei Ha'aretz, and in addition to that, there is Gezel. In addition to that, people are stealing. So there are two reasons that are given in the Torah, but ultimately, the Torah says, Vayom Elokim Noach, I'm going to destroy people, Ketz Chabasa Bolofanai, Kimalaha Ha'aretz, Chamas Mitnehem. Because there is Chamas, that's why people are destroyed. Meaning to say that although there are very serious averos that are going on, right? Gilui Arayis and Avodah Zarah, right? If there's one thing that you learn in Smicha, okay, don't forget this. Gilui Arayis, bad. Avodah Zarah, bad. Okay, everyone agree? Right? Although there's Gilui Arayis and Avodah Zarah, and both are bad, nonetheless, the real destruction. The reason, and Rashi writes, well, nechtam gezardinam elal gezel. Gezel, so to speak, is the makeb patish on that. We see also in the Torah in Parshas Vayera, in the destruction of Sodom. Right? The destruction of Sodom is referred to in common parlance as being based on sexual immorality. The term in English of sodomy comes from Sodom. Yet, right, the psukim in the Navi in particular speak about mechata Sodom, right? Right, the psukim in Yeshayahu speak about the sin of Sodom, which was a sin of oppressing the poor, a sin of stealing. It was that which is the sin. The Radak at the beginning of Sefer Yonah is bothered by Akasha. Those who were in the shir last year remember that, like, we really like Sefer Yonah. At the beginning of Sefer Yonah, the Radak is bothered. We have no other book in Tanakh where HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a Navi to talk to the Umos HaOlam. This exists nowhere else in Tanakh. It ain't there. What's going on in Noah? What's going on in Yonah? So the Radak has an explanation about why the Kriya to Nineveh happens, etc. But ultimately, the Radak writes, Hakel Yisbarach Mashgiach Af Ba'umas Ha'olam. One of the themes of Sefer Yonah is that God cares not only about Jews, but about Goyim also. Kishetigdar Ra'asam Bechamas. The sin that Nineveh was destroyed for, it's the last pasuk in Yonah, right? Right? Chamas is the sin for which Nineveh is destroyed. And the Radak writes, the other averis are only averis that Hashem punishes Klal Yisrael. But chamas is the one avera where we see in Tanakh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes the Umos HaOlam. And the Radak writes that it's because it destroys society. Hakel Yisbarach, Hechamas Mafsir HaYishuv. So Hakel Yisbarach will say, the Yishuv HaOlam. Chamas destroys the Yishuv. Now, it's interesting that in Chazal, they have, and this is found in a number of Midrashim, the Midrash comments about how what Nadar HaMabel was doing wrong was a particular type of Chamas, that they were stealing Pachos Mishave Pruta, which means what they are doing is they are stealing from others in a way that they cannot be punished by the legal system. Right? They are hiding money in Swiss bank accounts. They are doing illegal tax loopholes that mean that they can't be punished. And that, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, is why society has to be destroyed. The impression you get from the Radak is that Klal Yisrael and the Umos HaOlam, so to speak, have different missions in the world. The mission of Klal Yisrael is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we don't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we get punished. There are more severe Averos, less severe Averos in our service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Gotcha. However, the Umos HaOlam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically gives them a very few mitzvos. But the mitzvos HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Umos HaOlam all have the purpose of populating the world, keeping society intact. Think about the mitzvos that B'nai Noach have. They have Purivu. They have Dinim. Right? Dinim means don't steal, right? According to the Ramban al HaTorah. The Averis that the B'nai Noach suffer for, Eiver Min HaChai, means that they are abusing the world that God gave them. The particular type of arayas that B'nai Noach have are a different type of arayos than the Jews have. Again, this requires a much longer elaboration, but arayas for the Goyim are arayos that are not just the Gezeres HaKoso, but these are arayos that destroy society. Not every case of arayos destroys society. It's usher to have a consensual affair, but it doesn't necessarily destroy society. Right? Again, assuming that that's not included in the Cheshbon of arayos by B'nai Noach. I think the idea that the Radak is driving at, that we see clearly from the Psukim, is what? So Avodah Zarah and Birkas Hashem, you have to say that for the non-Jews, what that means is that if you have a, like the Me'iri understands it, if you have people who are not Gedurim B'darkei Hadassos, right? That means that they are unbound by any law system. Avodah Zarah for non-Jews does not mean the same as Avodah Zarah for Yidden. Excellent point, right? Yidden is a translation for Jews. Yidden are not allowed to worship any other deity. For non-Jews, atheism, at least according to the Me'iri, is a much greater offense than worshiping another deity. So long as they are Gedurim B'Darkei Hadassos, so long as they have some power that gives them law, the Me'iri at least says that we're not going to impose the punishments on non-Jews, right? That's an interesting idea. There are different roles in the planet, and the B'nai Noach, I would argue, the point of Chamas is to tell you, the point of Chamas is to tell you that when society is destroyed, particularly when society is being destroyed in a way that there is no recourse for punishment, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, guys, you're going to get it. Now that means, interestingly, that Chamas by B'nai Noach means something very different than Chamas by B'nai Yisrael. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, Ma ben Gazlin l'Chamsin, Gazlin lo yoev dami, Chamsin yoev dami. Chamsin by B'nai Yisrael means that I take an item from you and I just like chap and I say, here, Joe, here's $20 for the item, right? That's Chamas by B'nai Yisrael. Chamas by B'nai Noach is very different. The idea is that there are different punishment. And I would maintain that the theme I'm trying to develop is that the different levels of punishment refer to the different types of aveiros that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, is being makbid on. That's the first point I wanted to make that I think emerges from this conversation. I give you over here also an Orach Chaim HaKadosh, the last source in the Chumash section. The Orach Chaim asks precisely this kasha. I understand that Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayos lead to destruction. Those are serious aveiros. What I don't understand is why Chumash is part of the parasha. And he writes that, etc. He writes something along the same lines as what we are explaining now, but I think there are some nuances of difference, but that's the first point I wanted to mention. Okay, so there is destruction that happens based on chamas. The next point I wanted to mention is a point that relates to free will. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm bringing the Mabul. The Mabul is going to destroy all of humanity. Not only will it destroy all of humanity, but the Mabul will destroy all animals. Right? It's interesting that there is a punishment to humans and to animals. The only analog we have to this in halacha is Ir HaNidachas. And even then, there's a machlekes harishonim by Ir HaNidachas as to whether children in the Ir HaNidachas are killed. Do you kill the taf, meaning Yom Kesh Hadayim? Right? Do you kill the little babies by Ir HaNidachas? By the Mabul, everyone, Mikaton Ad Gadol, is destroyed. Now, obviously what that means is that the Avira of Chumas, of destroying society, means we got to start again. And on a certain level, the Teva of Noach can represent a new creation of the world. I believe the Mashgiach Rav Rivlin has something about this in his Sefer, but that's another point that's worth developing at a different time. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Noah, I'm destroying the planet, but you're okay. V'hakimosias brisi itach. I'm establishing a covenant with you, and you're going to make it. Right? That's what God says. Now, what's this covenant that God is making with Noah? So Rashi comments, the covenant is, bris ha-yotzarech al-haperos shlo yirakvu v'yafshu. You need a covenant that the fruit will not spoil. Noah has to eat in the Teva. The Mabul lasted about a year. Noah has to eat. So there is a bris that's necessary that the fruits should not get destroyed. And the bris is necessary, shelo yahargu rasha'im shebedar, that the evil people in the generation won't destroy Noah. Right? Noah, by the way, is probably the least successful Kiruv individual ever. He spends 120 years building this Teva. And the people are asking him, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And he says, oh, God is going to destroy the planet. And they don't listen. They don't do tshuva. Kiruv is often not a successful endeavor. But part of the lesson is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu establishes a bris with Noah that the Rishayim won't kill him. The evil people in the generation won't kill Noah. A special covenant is established that the evil people won't destroy Noah. Now, it's all that funny because Noah is in the Teva for a full year, basically, and they have all these wild animals with him, and he doesn't get killed. Usually, if you are near hyenas and cheetahs and whatever, you're not going to do too well, especially if you're in like a small confined area. You're not likely to survive. Nonetheless, Noah makes it. And there's no special bris, according to Rashi, that the animals won't kill Noah. There's a special bris that the humans won't kill Noah. So I saw in the Sefer of the Mir Rosh Hashiva, Rebellion Baruch Finkel, that he develops an idea that animals are incapable of killing people unless the people deserve it. It's a pasuk in Parshas Bereishis, "U'arachem v'chitchem yiyeh alko chayas ha-sadeh v'alko of ha-shamayim." Animals are naturally scared of humans. If an animal kills a human, it's because on some level, the human deserved it. However, people can get killed even if they are undeserving. A vicious, bad person can kill a righteous individual. You don't have to be deserving. You could be killed anyway. That's a wild idea, no? A person can die without doing something wrong. I can die because of you. Right? You're evil. You're going to kill me. I'm going to die. Hashem has to give a special bris to Noach to protect Noach from the evil people. This idea is found in Parshas Vayeshev. The Torah tells us that Reuven saves Yosef HaTzadik. Right? Reuven says, "Well, not kenu nafesh. We're not going to kill you. We won't kill people. But rather, you should take Yosef and throw him, hashlifo so elabar azeh sheba midbar. Take Yosef and throw him into this bar." And they take Yosef and they throw him into the bar. And the Torah tells me, "Vahar bar reik ein bo mayim," that the pit is empty, there's no water. And the Gemara teaches us in Shabbos, "Mayim ein bo van nechashim bak rabim yesh bo," that the pit had snakes and scorpions. Now here's the problem. Right? The Gemara in Yevamos teaches me that there are cases that I can testify that a woman is dead. That a husband is dead. Right? Classical aguna means that you're not sure about the husband's whereabouts. It doesn't mean the husband is withholding a get. It means you're not sure of the husband's whereabouts. And you have to testify that hubby is dead. What are the cases that you can testify the hubby is dead? Well, if the hubby is thrown into a pit with snakes and scorpions, we can testify he's dead. So nishala tasha ela, the question is, how exactly is Reuven saving Yosef? Right? He says, "Don't kill him. No. Throw him in the pit." But if he's thrown in the pit, he's going to die. So how is Reuven rescuing Yosef? So some say that the reason why it appears in the sugya of Chanukah is because a Chanukah candle that's over 20 amos is no good because you have to recognize it. And maybe this pit is deeper than 20 amos, so they didn't know that there are snakes and scorpions. Some say that Reuven is saying, "Throw him in this pit. He knew this pit doesn't have snakes and scorpions. Hashlucho so el habar hazeh." But then they take him by Shluchas Yosef el Habor, they throw him to some other pit. But the simple reading, and the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh has this, right? The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh writes, "Perosh, lefish ha'adam ba b'chira, ratzon. Humans have choice, and they have volition. V'yachol laharog mi shelo nischayiv misa. A human can kill someone who doesn't deserve to die. Animals won't destroy you, won't kill you, unless you're chayev misa. So therefore, v'hu omro v'yatzil mi'adam." So Reuven is saying, I'm going to save Yosef from the brothers, because he says, listen, miyad ha-bechiri. He's saving them from the brothers, who are people who have bechira, people who have choice, who have volition. Animals don't have volition. Reuven is saying, you know what? We're going to do a test. Literally, they used to talk about trial by fire. They used to talk about how, you know what? If you're really righteous, we're going to burn you and you're going to survive. No? The church, like, I think, employed trial by fire for many years. I don't know. I guess the people deserve to die. Maybe not, though. Because maybe the idea is that a human has the power to kill someone, even though that person is not deserving of death, according to the strict rules of Schayav HaOnesh. A person does not sin, but the person can be killed. This is a frightening idea in halacha, in hashgacha, that the ability that humans have of bechira is so strong that a person can die without sin. There's a Gemara in Chagiga Daf Hey that can be explained by that. This could explain the pasuk that we recite in Tachanun every day. We haven't said Tachanun in quite some time, but there's a pasuk. We used to say Tachanun, ancient history, before the month of Tishrei, which like basically means that like nothing happened in life besides Yom Tov. Before Tishrei, we said Tachanun. And in Tachanun we say, in the Nusach Ashkenaz, Nitwana B'yad Hashem, Ki Rabim Rachamav, B'yad Adam Alakola. I should fall, right? David says to God, Nitwana God, the Navi, gives David a choice, right? Do you want a famine? Or do you want a war or something? And David HaMelech says, I'd rather Nitwana B'yad Hashem, Ki Rabim Rachamav. Part of the idea is that David HaMelech is saying that Hashem will not punish me if I'm undeserving. But biyad adam al epola, because humans, says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, and according to our explanation, that's what Rashi is saying as well. Humans have the ability to kill someone who is undeserving. This is a very frightening and extreme version of Bechira Chofshes. That we have the ability to make choices such that a person who is technically undeserving will actually be killed. That's a wild idea. Now, this idea, of course, is subject to a lot of machlokas. There are two views in philosophy, what's called determinism, and what's called libertarianism. There's a certain person sitting next to me.
The wrong one.
What?
Wrong one. Wrong libertarian.
The wrong one.
There's two libertarians. One political philosophy.
Right. One libertarian is a philosophical concept, the other is a political concept. Right. You can be libertarian politically, which I'm not necessarily saying is a great idea, but some people may disagree with that. But libertarianism in the philosophical sense means that you have free reign. What the Aruch Haim HaKadosh is saying is an extreme version of libertarianism. I have such bechira that I can even kill somebody. Now, this same idea seems to be the Rambam, at least the Rambam in the Yad HaChazakah. This idea that determinism is limited in scope, and humans have more ability, the Rambam tells us as being the core of Hilchas Tshuva. Right? The Rambam writes, Hilchas Tshuva Perakei, HaRashos HaChadam Nesuna Amratza Mahatos Atzmo L'derech Tov V'liyos Tzadik HaRashos B'yado Imratza Mahatos Atzmo L'derech Ra'a HaRashos B'yado. Basically, humans have the ability not only to do bad, but to do good as well. That's the fundamental idea of tshuva, says the Rambam. Hein adam haya ka'achad mimenu, ladas tov v'ra. This is what the Torah writes, that humans are yochid ba'olam, ein min sheni domelo. Humans have knowledge, humans know right and wrong, va'oseh kol ma shehu chafetz. A human can do whatever the human desires, which means we might have certain predilections based on how we were born and based on the society that we live in. We might have certain tendencies, but our free will, at least for the Rambam in the Yad HaChazakah, our free will is absolute. And that means that tshuva is always a possibility. Now, this, of course, raises questions in terms of Paron, his heart being hardened, etc. But that is also based on choices that Paro made. We have the ability to make choices, both for good, for real harm, to kill people. Now, what this means for the victim, how can the victim suffer if, right, the victim, he or she does not deserve so, is a very serious philosophical conundrum. And this might be the basis of certain Kabbalistic ideas of Gilgal, Kabbalistic ideas of how neshamas, etc., end up right back in the world when they don't. That solves a problem of how could an individual die when the individual is not guilty. That could solve the problem in one of two ways. Either you are guilty in the previous Gilgal, or you're not guilty, but you get killed, and you're going to come back and have opportunities, right? It could go in both directions, past and future. That could solve the problem. But the fact is, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, and what the Mir Rosh Hashiva is arguing, Rashi, they both explain the idea that humans have the right to kill someone who is halachically undeserving of death. And although that seems like a very negative notion of humanity, it also is a very positive notion, because that means that tshuva, as the Rambam says it, is always possible. Now again, I'm referring to the Rambam in the Yad HaZoch, but the Rambam in the Mor and the Nevuchim has a much more complicated notion of, what's it called, of determinism and libertarianism. But at least the Rambam in the Yad takes it this way. Now, in the modern yeshiva world, people have great difficulty with this Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. And in the Sefer of Rav Chaim Friedlander, Rav Chaim Friedlander wrote this book called the Sifsei Chaim. He's like the major Talmud of Rav Dessler. And it's a work of Hashgafa philosophy that I think is relatively popular in our world. Hence, I did not have to go to the library this morning to take out a Sifsei Chaim. I just walked into the Beis Medrash. In the back of the Beis Medrash, on the side, they have a set of Sifsei Chaim, right? So it's a relatively popular work. So the Sifsei Chaim says that the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh can't really mean what he says. And it can't be that humans die even when they don't deserve it. Rather, he argues that there are two types of punishments. There's punishment based on brute strength, and there's punishment based on the notion called ayin hara. And the notion of ayin hara is the type of punishment that Hashem decides to impose on people, that even though the person, according to our calculation, might not deserve it, but the person really deserves to suffer. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh does not sound that way at all. That's the way Rav Friedlander is explaining the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. I know why he's doing that. I understand it, because it really is frightening. But I do think that there is a correct possible approach in Judaism, that determinism is not at all an idea, but rather that we have complete free reign and free will. I think that approach is possible. Now, when I say possible, I mean that certainly it's not kfira. When I say possible, it also does not mean unanimous. Right? There clearly are schools of thought that limit our ability to do things. In Rabbi Wiederblank's book, I just looked at it this morning very quickly, he has like only 4 pages on this Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. He says that the Zohar agrees with the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, but the Abarbanel disagrees. I'm happy to say that just like in halacha, much of my salary comes from analyzing machlokes. In hashkafa, I only say much of my salary, not my entire salary. I also get paid for telling jokes. But the point is that in hashkafa also there can be a machlokes, and I do think that this approach is a legitimate approach. So that's the second point I wanted to make. The first is about Hamas and destruction of society, and that's why the Dharmaba deserved to die. The second approach is that there's a possibility that Noah would have been killed by evil people, even though he didn't deserve to die, because humans are able, have the capability of killing someone who does not deserve to die. The third approach I wanted to mention is obviously opening a can of worms, and that is the question of evolution. So here's the thing. How big was the teva? 300 amos. The biggest measurement of an ama is 2 feet, 600 feet, okay? That is 2 football stadiums, no? A football stadium is 100 yards. A football field is 100 yards, nachon? Football season, Tom Brady is the only person alive who's my age and is still playing football, who could guess? But the point is that 2 football fields is the length of the entire table. How large is an elephant? How many elephants can you fit into a table? And forget elephants. I also have to put in quite other large animals. How do you do this? So there are a few approaches. One approach, and Rabbi Horowitz quotes that the Ralbag al Hatar is bothered by this question, and he said that the teva is like a menagerie. Basically, you have these little miniature animals, and right, like you push the, there is some movie about like Mom, I Shrunk the Kids. No, you take the animals, and yeah, this is an elephant. You see it? Elephant, right?
The Ralbag.
The Ralbag says that the animals are all made smaller. The Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, references this approach. Says it's a miracle, right? Just like we have by the Beis Hamikdash, that there ain't enough space for all the people. Right, and everyone is shoulder against shoulder. It's time to bow down. There's suddenly enough space. In the Teva of Noah, also suddenly there's enough space. Okay, miracle. Yeah, you can't. Mifrek nishkin kashas. You can't ask questions on miracles. It's miraculous. But there's another school of thought, and in the footnotes on the Shavel Ramban, he references it. And the Hamik Davar in Parshas Bereishis, in Parshas Noach, Anar Psukim explains it also, which is that perhaps there is Darwinian evolution. Meaning to say that the number of species that we have today on the planet are far more than the number of species that the Ribono Shel Olam created. And consequently, when Noah puts animals into the teva, he's putting in enough animals that can populate the animal kingdom over time, but that means that there's species to species evolution. Everyone agrees that evolution happens. You cannot deny that evolution happens. If you take enough antibiotics, your body will morph, right, to become immune to certain things. People change, animals change, right? That is clear. But whether there is evolution species to species is a big question. Years ago, I'm old enough to remember this, there was a whole controversy. Actually, the New York Times wrote about this, Ari. I don't know if you were the one who wrote the story or not, but there was a Rabbi Natan Slifkin, who he used to be called Nassim Slifkin. He changed his name because of this issue. Rabbi Slifkin published a number of books, The Hair, The Hyrax, and whatever, where he was trying to argue what are the species that the Torah says are forbidden. And then he has another book on the age of the universe and on evolution. And he argued that evolution, in the true Darwinian sense of species to species, can happen. It could happen. And if evolution can happen, so that's interesting. But that also put Natan Slifkin, Nassim Slifkin, then into Chayrin. And there was a whole back and forth. And people said, he's going against Chazal. And Natan Slifkin said, yeah, but I have sources to support me. He has sources that when Chazal speak about science, they're using the knowledge that they had. Right? Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam is famous for that. And the evolution argument, he maintains, has genuine sources that can back evolution up. It's possible. By the way, this means, potentially, that Adam HaRishon didn't look like any of us, no? The Adam HaRishon might have been a great ancestor of ours, but humans are a certain developmental stage, perhaps later on, than that initial thing that Ribbono Shel Olam created. Or it could mean that Adam HaRishon is the first human, and there was a lot of pre-humans before Adam HaRishon, right? You could go either way. But clearly, this approach is saying that the Teva of Noah was populated by...
So, evolution will answer this. 5,000 years, not
years. Yeah, 4,100 years.
In terms of the age of the universe question, how quickly things could happen.
I call more than that from Noah, even the people who challenged the universe before Noah, all agree from Noah on the canon.
But again, what you're asking is there are two questions here. Can there be evolution species to species? And then if there is, how long that takes? So the question as to how long it takes, I don't have a satisfactory answer yet. But I do think, and if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Slifkin does not bring these sources in his Sefer. I do think that Parshas Noah gives us a certain insight that there, I don't think it's kfira to believe in Darwinian evolution. Now, I might lose my job for this, even though I talk about Machlokas HaRishonim and I tell jokes, right? This might lead to... What? I don't have plausible deniability, right? The whole thing was a joke. Nah, I don't think. We mean this.
No. You lose your job. Is that a joke? That's another joke.
Yeah.
Just scared me.
But I do think it's worth noting, again, it's important to my mind that when we read these parashiyos at the beginning of Chumash Bereishis, we should think about it based on terms and concepts and ideas that we have in our world of 2021. Right? So when Parshas Bereishis is murder, given what we know about the world, Parshas Noah is pretty hard also. Maybe not as hard as Parshas Bereishis, it's pretty hard. And most of us grew up in a world where we learned that evolution is like the third rail. And that's not at all consistent with Orthodox Judaism. And we grew up in a world where we were saying, like, oh, the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares everything, and there's chet and onesh, and you can't die unless you deserve it. But I do think that when we read the psukim carefully, we can begin to challenge some of these notions that we felt were like ikari ha'emuna. So these are some of the points I wanted to make. Again, I think the point of Chamas is an important point. Just to add to the last point of Chamas, which I forgot to say, you know, the end of Yom HaKippurim, it's almost like the highlight of the year. So what do we daven for in Ne'ilah? What's the prayer of Ne'ilah? So what we say is, "L'man nechdal me'oshek yadenu," that we should not steal from others, we should not abuse people monetarily. Right? That's the last thing that we're praying for at the end of Yom HaKippurim. What that really means is that ultimately, as long as we maintain this, you know, society won't be destroyed on some level. Again, Judaism, different than Goyim, like we mentioned beforehand, but I think the importance of Hamas as being like the fatal flaw, I think is certainly stressed by these psukim. So these are some of the points I wanted to mention to kind of pique your curiosity. And any questions or comments, observations, or jokes?
Just one thing that bothered me for a long time.
So, slowly?
One thing that bothered me for a long time is the fact that this is a Noah, I'm much more humble than many of them for us. I just can't grapple.
So again, how come B'nai Noach have more severe punishments than Jews have for the same Avera? It's a longer conversation. I have a few shirim online that try to deal with these questions. We don't have enough time. I have a shir about Gezel Pachos Mishavar Pruta, where I spend time trying to go through that particular issue. Yeah, there's a lot to say about it. Okay. Yes, Benjamin.
Someone who lives to 120 has raised his young and then dies. You assume that there's deserving of death as part of that?
So one of the topics that we didn't have Hashkofa share last week is there any real source that people only can live 120 years? Right?
Okay.
If someone, we have a statement in Chazal that there are only four people who died with what's called Be'itov Shel Nachash, right? The Christian notion of original sin seems not to be really accepted by Judaism at all. There are people who die without sin. It exists. It exists. That's a fundamental idea in Judaism. That idea, again, you're saying, does it exist clearly before the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh? I don't know. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh is certainly saying it. So, at least unless you fetch out of the Aruch Chaim, he's saying that. So, yeah, it's possible that someone can die without any sort of sin, and maybe the Kabbalistic idea of Gilgulim takes the edge off of that. But I do think it's worth analyzing nonetheless. Okay, any other questions?
Do you think that satisfactorily answers the question of Tzadik Verallo?
Again, Tzadik Verallo, the question of theodicy is a slightly different question than what we're addressing now. Theodicy means that you can have a tzaddik who's doing everything right, and he suffers, she has a difficult life. Right? That's the real question of theodicy. That's the question that we know Moshe Rabbeinu asked God. Ha'ini nas klodecha? Right? That was Moshe's question to Ribbono Shel Olam. And we don't really know the answer to that question. And that's an unanswerable question on some level. This point is related to theodicy, but it's a more extreme question, I'd say. Right? It's not just that you can have a bad life. It's not just that you can suffer, but that you could die. And why we deserve to die, right? Sometimes the answer is, I don't deserve it, but I'm going to blame somebody else. I think that might help the theodicy question, that I don't deserve it, someone else is to blame, though it certainly doesn't completely answer it. Okay, gentlemen, we should have a marvelous day, and I have to figure out.
Raya, but I have this idea before. I believe Chetzi Shears are always the longest ones.